Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley and the full regular crew, including Mark Van Aken and Dean Hennessy, back on deck this week for the first time since before Christmas. Looking forward to delivering you all the football stories with first edition news in a minute. First up, after they were robbed last week and ahead of Sunday's appointment with Newcastle, the Wanderers' Robbie Cornthwaite, then Dino in with his weekly A-League wrap, and we'll wrap up the first hour with the voice of the W-League, Stephanie Brantz, to preview the penultimate round and look ahead to the finals. In the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with second edition news, then 442 Singapore's Paul Williams to talk through all the John Book Motors scandal in the ACL, and then we'll go through all the international news with Dean and Mark with stoppage time. Edge, it's good to have you back from your tropical island. I'm glad to see you've taken your smoking jacket off.
And tropical island?
You're working, you know, you've done some international deals, you settled some FIFA disagreements, and now you're back to work on our humble little program.
It's good to be back, but I haven't seen you for about a month, Rob. You've grown a bit of a beard, I know.
Yeah, it's still the holiday beard. It's still rolling there. I'm not quite sure whether it's working or not, but you know, I'm trying to keep some sort of manscaping stuff going there around the chin.
I thought you might have been doing a bit of work in that Turek mansion that you live in.
Okay, touche. Good to have you back, brother. But it's just a week where too much football is barely enough. We're going to talk to Paul Williams about this John Book thing.
What about, for me, three things off the bat, and we'll have a bit of a chat of those before we hit the news. But, yeah, John Book Hyundai, that's actually massive news. It's probably maybe got away a little bit under the radar here in Australia, but that is a huge news. That is the equivalent of a Chelsea or a Man U or a Man City in Premier League context being booted out of the Champions League. We know that this issue has been going for some time, and that'll be interesting to have a good discussion with Paul Williams about that. The other two items that stood out for me was Tim Cahill and rescuing Melbourne City, his two goals in last night's fixture, very significant contribution.
Yeah, but that game was ruined. I mean, what's going on with the officials? You know? I mean, Bess Harper is, you know...
It is just, for me, O'Donovan send-off was a carbon copy of Bess Harper. Soft, linesman making a call, bring on the video review. Bring it on.
Yeah, well, look, it's about time because, look, it's one thing to be slamming the officials, but it's another thing to give them the opportunity to make decisions with all of the information that they need. And, you know, talking to players off the record sometimes, they will tell you that the officials within minutes of a decision look up at the big screen and acknowledge to the players on the field that they've made the wrong decision. And, you know, it just changes the entire nature of games. And you look at the situation with Western Sydney Wanderers last week, where there should have been a penalty. Yeah, bring on the video ref. Anyway, Marco, what do you got for us, brother?
Well, we know the A-League is actually going to be one of the first, if not the first, leagues in the world to introduce video. So your wish was, of course, at the FFA's command there, Rob. And you are looking a bit like Hank Scorpio from The Simpsons.
you were holding an
orange goatee.
You would have noticed I laughed before. That's because Mark was doing a bit of a visual work in the studio. Well done, Mark.
But I like Hank Scorpio. He had this plan to take over the world. It didn't quite work out, but, you know, it was good while it lasted.
Have you got some news, Mark?
We have got some news. Now, the Chinese Super League outfit Liaoning Huiwin have signed Socceroos duo Robbie Cruz and James Holland. Their agent confirmed yesterday. First of all, let's put in I don't know who it was, someone in the Twitter sphere, but they said James Holland is leaving from Adelaide Hulus to go to Huiwin in China. But anyway, Holland, 27, cut short his time with United after signing in the off-season, while Robbie Cruz can look forward to regular playing time after a meagre spell with the German powerhouse Bayer Leverkusen. According to SBS, a two-year deal has been agreed for Cruz. Cruz was, of course, linked to the MLS, perhaps even a move back to the A-League. But this announcement ends speculation. In fact, a friend of ours, Michael Adam Tenanini, I think might have put two and two together and come up with five, seeing Robbie Cruz at the victory game during the week. So Anyway.
Well, he was wrong, wasn't he?
Oh, yep. Talk about fake news. Anyway, Liaoning. Liaoning finished 11th in the 2016 Chinese Super League and boasted the likes of former A-League talent Dario Vidicic and Michael Thwaite, who it now looks like two Aussies are coming in. Another two Aussies will be out the door.
Interesting.
No comment.
No, Robbie Cruz, we want him to play. So that's
I don't want him to play in bloody China.
No, but if he gets regular game time there, it'll help the overall cause with the Socceroos. But James Holland, is he? He didn't.
What's
really,
going on?
He didn't cut it here, did he?
He came back to Australia after a stint overseas and really didn't impress at all at Adelaide United, and then he's leaving him the lurch.
FIFA World Cup 2014 Brazil, he was obviously part of the squad and did get a little bit of game time, but I just was hoping he would kick on, and he hasn't.
No, he hasn't. That's a very simple, fair assumption, I think.
Anyway. Disappointing. But anyway, he's off to Liaoning with Robbie, and they'll be having some dumplings and chili, no doubt.
What do we know about Liaoning? I don't really know a lot about it. You know?
No, it's not something I've done a lot of research into, Mark.
Good stuff. When are we going to start to see some of this Chinese Super League on
TV?
I mean, there's so many.
Why isn't it on BBC Sport or ESPN or Fox? Because, well, not only that, there's the big names that go there, but it's pretty much where half our Socceroos are playing, too.
Well, my brother lived in Guangzhou, and he went all the time with his boy Joel. And
so you have a Grand.
The other one?
Yeah, Greentown. Yeah. The thing is there, he said it was good fun.
Yeah.
Really good fun. The fans are great. Atmosphere's good.
Well, we've got one or two people to fill the stadium.
Yeah, I imagine the TV content's probably pretty good. It's a job for you, Mark. You can commentate. Yeah, you know all the names.
Sorry, folks, but just talking about a former FFV staffer before, when Victoria used to have its touring team, it used to play Tianjin Tata, and they'd play over in China and get like 65,000, 70,000 to the game, and then they'd play the return leg at Bob Jane Stadium in front of about 300 people. Anyway, I digress. Manchester United are a long way from winning the English Premier League again, but are back on top of another table of soccer's biggest moneymakers. For the first time since 2005, Man United took over Real Madrid in top spot in the finance rankings compiled by accountancy Deloitte, even as they sit sixth in the Premier League. Last year, when they only won the FA Cup and failed to qualify for the Champions League, the 20-time league champions generated €689 million based on the annual average. Spanish champions Barca had 620 in revenue, and Real Madrid, who won an 11th Champions League title in May, dropped to third on $620.1 million. So Barca fans will be reveling in that, no doubt.
That's excluding broadcast rights too.
Wasn't it just the right place at the right time? Because that could easily have been Liverpool if they hadn't have bottomed out when they did, and Sir Alex, went on that extraordinary run with Manchester United. Possibly an Arsenal if they had have had some better
results. Won something in Europe, yeah.
Yeah. But there you go. What's next, brother?
Hey, mate, don't worry. Liverpool will be back, mate. Jurgen will win us
the
title.
That just proves power of the English game is still healthy.
Absolutely. Now, Tim Cahill caught up with Fox Sports this week, and he wasn't exactly chuffed. Now, this was before last night's game, but he wasn't exactly chuffed by some of the refereeing and tribunal findings last weekend. Let's have a listen.
All right, onto the A-League. How disappointing was the last-minute loss to Adelaide a few days ago?
It can be frustrating because you look at decisions that affect, our rivals, Melbourne Victory. So it got overturned for them, which is a blessing, but you can't overturn clear-cut goals. You can't overturn clear-cut incidences in a derby. I think you just got to grow and you've got to learn and you've got to improve, and under Valcanis, there's a real buzz about the place. You've got Melbourne Victory hitting some real fine form. They're all firing at all levels. And for us, it's still finding our groove. We said at the start of the season there's 9 new players. We've done some great things already this season, but when we click, there's not a lot of teams that can stay with us, and there's plenty of time for us to climb back up the table, and it's going to be a good end to the season because there's still a lot of development for us to progress.
So it's a little dated because it was obviously before last night's game, where he's done it again. Brace, he's unbelievable how he just scores that head every single time.
He's incredible.
He's scored 7 goals now?
I believe it's 7. Actually, we're talking with Dino off air, trying to work out if that was in real time. So 7 goals for the season. He certainly delivered from that perspective.
Yeah, he sure has. He's done everything that he can possibly do at City so far, bar drag a big crowd.
Won them an FFA Cup.
Yeah, so look, from a City point of view, from an A-League point of view, hopefully they can make a run and at least compete well in the pointy end of the season in the finals and then drag in some good crowd to finish the season on a high. They won't win the competition, but get set for next season with a nice solid foundation.
Oh, well, as he said there, I think they'd still like to think they can win it.
Of course.
I don't think they can. I don't think they will anyway.
Yeah, they'd like to think they can, but they won't because either Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory will win that. But hey, we'll stand to be corrected because I did predict City to win at the beginning of the season.
Did you?
And, I did. It's shelved
and
I'm officially jumping off the bandwagon.
We might need to go to the referee for that. Did you pick Sydney?
No, City, I said.
Oh, you did.
So
I said Sydney. I'm glad that I clarified that point.
Yeah, absolutely. You did clarify because I know you would have trawled through every episode just to find the incriminating piece of evidence if I didn't come clean. Okay, that's news part one. That's the start of the show done. Looking forward to talking to Robbie Cornthwaite. He's a great footballer, but he's also a great bloke behind the microphone. He'll give us
bit of a journeyman.
Yeah, he is a journeyman with Adelaide and in Korea. He'll have a bit to say on the K-League situation with John Book Motors. That's all coming up next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. And the Wanderers, they've stumbled to gain any momentum this season and were furious after last week's Sydney Derby stalemate that most thought was stolen from them by poor officiating. To talk us through that and their appointment with Newcastle this Sunday, welcome to Box, Robbie Cornthwaite.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
Mate, we're going real good, Robbie. And look, I'm lucky we're talking to you now rather than, 6 or 7 weeks ago when, your next points looked far away. But how was that game? I mean, watching it on TV, it really did, as a neutral observer, look like you were stiff. And Popper certainly made his feelings clear. What was the feeling in the sheds after the game?
Yeah, I think at the time, I mean, if you look back on the replay, I think straight away I've thrown my hand up and I knew straight away that it was a handball. And like it's been mentioned a few times in the media, initially, handball, and then, he hasn't even given a corner. So,
yeah.
Actually, the following corner, when I went forward, I had a word to him, and he said, I've missed that one. He knew, he obviously had looked up and seen on the big screen after, like the rest of us. And, he acknowledged that it was a penalty and that he had missed it. But, it's a bit too late then. But in saying that, I thought we played quite well, defended really well as a team. And, it's a good performance, but it's about getting results for us now in the second half of the season.
Yeah, it sure is. And mate, look, you've got a glittering career, close to 300 first team matches. Firstly with Adelaide, and your time with City before you went to Adelaide, and then your 6 years in the K League. How is the feeling at the Wanderers now that you're starting to turn it around and ahead of this Sunday's appointment with the Jets?
Yeah, it's very positive. It's a funny one. I've mentioned a few times to the boys that, I've been in situations like this before with other teams in terms of league position, and the morale is really down, or there's fractions within the team. But I can honestly say every day at training, the boys are just, they're moving on to the next game, so to speak. So, that Sydney game's done. Yes, we're happy with our performance, but now all the focus is on Newcastle, and we're upbeat. And although the results haven't been going for us, I think we still are a very, very hard side to beat. That shows in the amount of draws we've had. And I'm sure if we can pick up one or two games on the run, there'll be a lot of nervous teams looking down at us coming up at Adam.
Robbie, I'm really interested to talk to you about your time in the A-League before you went to Asia and now that you've returned. What's been your impression of the A-League's progression while you were in Asia? Is there anything that you can put your finger on that tell us that you think it's improved or maybe plateaued?
I think definitely the professionalism. I do feel that I'm at one of the more professional clubs, and I can only speak from my experiences at Western Sydney, but it's well known Popper's attention to detail, and that's something that's really stood out to me. It's easy for every team to say, all right, let's go out there and give our all, but as Popper says, effort you know, you shouldn't really get patted on the back for effort because, you know, that's a bare minimum. So the way we look after ourselves off the park, our diet, the way we train, you know, there's a lot of things in place at Western Sydney that weren't in place in the A-League when I was around. And obviously the calibre of players that are being attracted now from the likes of, you know, Melbourne City, obviously, with their budget. And, you know, there's just a bit more of a quality and a cutting edge to most of the teams now than there was, you know, 7 or 8 years ago.
And what about the expectation at Western Sydney? I mean, you played for a big club in Malaysia, and I mean, those people who follow you on social media, you do a fantastic job of letting fans into what it means to you to play for your clubs. Are you feeling the expectation and pressure at Western Sydney?
I don't know about that. I know being at this club, you know, it's been very successful in a short amount of time, and that's part and parcel of it now. You know, there's other teams that sort of hover around that 7, 8, 9 position, and you know, not too much is said about it. It's kind of, you know, becomes the norm. But for Western Sydney, they expect to be up the top and competing for titles, and that's the kind of club you want to be at as a player. You know, like I said, the history of the club in a short time, they haven't managed to win that grand final, and that's certainly an aim of ours this season. Nobody at our club thinks that that's not achievable this year. And like I said, big second half of the season and push on and cause some real damage in the finals. And at the same time, we want to win the Asian Champions League again. First and foremost, we've got to get through the group stage, but we're looking, you know, right down towards the pointy end of that competition, and this is a club that wants to win trophies.
Robbie, it's Dean here. Looking at the game, obviously, this weekend at home to Newcastle Jets, it's a bit of a six-pointer in the regards to, like, if you get the result, you leapfrog them, but if they get their result, they push away and it looks a little bit harder then to try and make that finals. Has any emphasis been played this week in your preparation for that?
I mean, we take every team, you know, with the same amount of respect, the same attention to detail, the same video analysis. Everything that we do with one side, we will do the next. But you're right in saying that it is a massive, massive game for us at home against Newcastle. It's a game that we, after last week's performance, it's a game that we absolutely must win. There's no doubt about that. We want to be climbing that table, and it's a great opportunity to put another side below us. And we're not going to shy away from the fact that for our club, this is a big, big match, and anything less than 3 points will be very disappointing.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to the Western Sydney Wanderers, Robbie Cornthwaite, ahead of their game against the Newcastle Jets at Campbelltown on Sunday. So Campbelltown, mate, you're sort of the wandering Wanderers right now. Your home ground is being turned into one of the great stadiums of this country, but it's going to be nearly a couple of years before you get there. So Spotless is starting to take shape with a bit of atmosphere. But Campbelltown, what do you make of Campbelltown? Have you played there before? And what's the expectation going out there, you know, for that home atmosphere that's just so tangible when the red and black block are firing up?
Yeah, it is. We have trained and we have played there previously. We played an FFA Cup match there against Wellington before the season started, and we managed to get the win. It's a good stadium. Obviously, it's a bit more out west, a bit more towards our heartland, I suppose. So hopefully we can get a good turnout. It's a community round as well for us. So don't quote me, but I think there's a free entry for kids.
I think there'll be a few kids will quote you if they get out there.
They said, just Robbie said I could come in for free.
Yeah, exactly. So just check on the website for that one before you rock up. that might get a few more down there, and they might have to pay once they get there. So. but it is a big game. We'll train there on Saturday, and we're really looking forward to it. It's a tight ground. The fans are very close to the action. So if we can get some good numbers out there, then it'll be a fantastic atmosphere.
Earlier in the interview, you spoke to Rob about, you know, you're coming home back to Australia and what had changed. Has any particular team or style of opposition or individual caught your eye since you've been back?
I think Melbourne City, although they've had their struggles more recently in terms of getting results, although it is a similar style to what Adelaide played under Gombau, I think the setup is something we haven't really seen in Australian football. The rotations and the numbers that they get forward, and they leave themselves quite open at the back, but no one's been able to really exploit them because they keep the ball so well. So I think that is a different style we're seeing in Australian football. But I did hear some comments the other day about, you know, the chat about two divisions and the relegation, and, you know, if a team was battling to stay up, would they park the bus and teach, you know, young kids different styles of playing the game. So there is a lot of things still to be learned, but I do think that's a style that we haven't seen too much of in Australian football.
Robbie, we can't let you go without just getting your reflections on the K-League and the absolute massive news that Jeonbuk Hyundai, one of the big super clubs in Korea, has been thrown out of the ACL for a club scout making payments to referees back in 2013. Can we just get your reflections on that and just what sort of shockwaves that'll send through Korean football?
Yeah, it's massive. Very, very big. I heard the story about 6 or 7 months ago about the scout, you know, paying some referees. I don't think it was a huge amount of money, but, you know, any amount of money is not acceptable. And I think they got a 9-point deduction in the K-League, and they ended up losing the championship on the last day to FC Seoul. There was some talk at the time then that they should be kicked out of the ACL last year, or the year, sorry, just finished, but they weren't, and they went on to win the competition. So there was a little bit of controversy surrounding that, and now they've been kicked out of this year's competition. I'm pretty sure we haven't heard the last of it. I'm sure they're going to be, you know, appealing and seeing what can come of that. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not the first time Asian football, or even in particular South Korea, has had these type of problems. When I went there in 2011, there was a massive bribery scandal the year before, and I think about 30 players ended up getting life bans, and the sports minister for the country threatened to disband the whole league. So, unfortunately, it's part of Asian football, and yeah, it's something we need to stamp out. And I hope that you know, if these allegations are true of them bribing, then I do believe that they shouldn't be involved in the competition this year.
Yeah, and well said, mate, because I know we all endorse that view, whether it's a South Korean team, whether it's an Australian team, no matter who they are, if you're going to get involved in this kind of corruption, then you deserve to cop the full force of the law and whatever retribution is meted out. So, hey, Robbie, look, thank you for joining us, mate. Good luck on Sunday and for the rest of the season. We'll be watching you with interest. We've really enjoyed your career over the years, mate. You've been a first-class performer at every club you play at, and a real entertainer as well, mate. And you're a great contributor in the media when you get the opportunity.
Thanks very much, guys. Any time. Thank you.
That's brilliant, mate. So that was Robbie Cornthwaite on the Western Sydney Wanderers. Dino, you're going to stick around, mate, because we're going to chat A-League in a little more detail after the break.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, of course. This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, streaming on whatever app you like, whether it's radio app, the new radio industry app, or TuneIn Radio, or whatever app you happen to like. Or, you know, always jump back if you miss some of the show onto boxtoboxnts.com.au. You can hear our podcasts from this week and every other week. Now, our great mate Dino, you've already tantalised us a little with what's going to be a great round of A-League coming up, but mate, it's all starting to slowly take shape. Some teams that we thought were out of it are starting to merge back in, Wellington style. City, just when you think that they're going to drop off, Timmy Cahill steps up and they get a refereeing decision go their way.
Well, you know, it's been an interesting week. We've had the catch-up game that's been hanging around for a while. Mm. And they're always there. And you're thinking, well, that's a 3 points. We can bank that. But you can't. And that's the problem. And Wellington have really, for me, turned it around. Obviously, when Ernie left, they weren't sure who was going to take over. But since they've actually announced it to them and they've got the job permanently, they've done really, really well. Mm. So a 3-0 win at home, goals to Bonaventure, Tratt, and also Barbaroussis against his old team. Victory had their chances, but like anything in football, you know, you don't take them. It was interesting to note as well where, you know, they're talking about playing the same team week in, week out. I don't blame Kevin for that. I think, you know, he would have been ridiculed had he made three or four changes to, you know, freshen it up, as they say. Why are you tinkering it when you've just had this unbelievable run? So, as a manager, sometimes with the pressure, you can't win. But I think that they're going to need to bounce back. And obviously, we'll preview that later on in this little segment when they go to Perth.
What about last night's game?
Yeah, well, Timmy's got seven goals now, and it's a good return. I don't care what you say, you know, the profile he brings to the game. And it's great for the profile and the crowds and the branding, but, you know, he does it on the pitch, you know, and it was two good goals, a great little corner where he's, they've obviously, it's a set play where they make dummy runs and he just becomes free and finishes it. And then it was good old Timmy with his head, because he scores lots of goals with his head. It's, they had a chance just before that got cleared, but it was the next cross that came in. But I still think the deciding factor to that game, or had a big influence, was the Roy O'Donovan send-off.
Well, he scored the equaliser.
Yeah, he had, yeah.
And then for me, Dean, it's not a send-off. I mean, there's a lot of similarity between it and the Bessart Berisha one.
Well, I think it's worse than Bess, because his arm's higher. But I don't think either of them... Look, he's looking around, but he doesn't look directly. He's just seeing where they are, and you get like a peripheral vision when you just check your head. You just get a little, I know he's around that area. And he's putting his arms out to feel for him.
Both decisions, linesmen made the calls. Referees didn't see them.
Yeah.
They took the linesman advice, and both decisions, in my view, are wrong.
Yeah, look, it'll
you'll
see if
you'll
get
the,
pulled.
Yeah, look,
but that's clearly where the use of the video comes
it's
in.
The
assistant
it's
referees are entitled to come in and make their observations, but they're not entitled to change the course of the game.
Well, they are currently under the rules.
Well, you know my point. And what I'm saying is that that is the occasion where they come in and say, take a look.
I reckon we've got a really simple solution to this. If each manager had two opportunities to check something in each half, it wouldn't take any more than 20, 30 seconds. They look at it, they go, yeah, we made a mistake. And then,
we are traditionalists around here, but that's a good idea.
Yeah, though. And I just think it just would then, you know, if there's three incidents and you miss out on the third because you've done your two, well, that's luck of the draw. You know,
Ruined tennis? Has it ruined
cricket?
You know, I mean, I know the extreme example is American football where, you know, a game that 50 years ago I saw the Super Bowl went for 2 and a bit hours and now it goes for 5 hours because of all, you know, it's the same length of game, but because of all the, you know, the interruptions, it goes for that much longer. Nobody's advocating that sort of thing. But
no, but
just,
I think it works well in rugby. It doesn't work well in AFL, but it works well in rugby league.
Well, but rugby league fans might argue against that. Because,
hey, but let's move on. Let's move on.
Sydney FC.
Yeah, absolutely. Sydney FC in Adelaide. The juggernaut continues. Obviously, they got away with last week's game against Western Sydney, Sydney FC, didn't they?
They did. That was
another refereeing decision could have changed the course.
Again, caused a lot of grief, really, there. I thought Sydney FC, you know, they were due a game where they most probably didn't play as well as they have. They've been, you know, what happened to maybe Victory in Wellington. Sydney were due one, but again, an incredible ability for 15 games to only, you know, draw 4 and win 11. I mean, it's a great result, and they're in a really good position because of Victory's loss in the week. Adelaide obviously won, and, you know, all of a sudden have jumped off the bottom and are in touching distance. But I just think Sydney will win this and go back. And I just want to just quickly touch on in fact, we'll wait till the Western Sydney Wanderers and we'll talk about Vedran, because I thought that was quite cute.
It was very good. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Sydney for me too, and I'm sure that's Rob's tip. So let's move to Westpac Stadium, Wellington Phoenix and Brisbane Roar.
Fifth v fourth.
Yes,
I mean,
it's hard to say that,
fifth v fourth.
Say that very quickly.
But Wellington, I mean, I think, you know, at home especially, Boyd with the Central Coast Mariners win, then the Victory win, now they got Brisbane. I actually think, because Brisbane's away form's not bad. They've won 2, drawn 3, lost 3. But I think Wellington, I really do fancy them to keep this run going. And I think if they do, then all of a sudden they become in the reckoning, because they will go to the same level points as Brisbane. So is it going to be a really interesting game, this one?
And I think what they were missing early in the season, which was a little bit of strike power. I know Shane Smeltz, he's been... he's not fit. He's come back not fit. He's going to need another 3 or 4 weeks to get match fit. But I'll tell you what, if he gets his mojo on before the end of the
especially
season,
especially if they're in there and thereabouts.
That's right.
Without doubt. Now, most probably, maybe the game of the round now. It was fifth v second, but because of the results during the week, Perth now dropped to sixth.
Game of the round.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is. It's victory. You've got to just get back on the horse. You know, it was one of them blips during the week. I think the send-off with Royston Griffiths, poor discipline, because it was a second yellow. He just misses a week. He then jumps towards the referee with a bit of a verbal, looked quite aggressive. And we know,
Verbal's being keen. You've been kind. I think it was more like a gobful.
Yeah, but he actually went towards him as well. So the referee not only went yellow-red, then within seconds went another red. So I don't know what they've actually pinged him on. Is it a red, straight red? Because then that's different.
I know you get a bit of a suntan from time to time, Dino. But those are the types of things that do give you coaches a
manager's
red face.
Terrible.
They just, the blood pressure goes through the roof.
It's indiscipline. He's going off.
Kenny
anyway.
Doesn't get too uptight, does he?
Not much. look, you do. You're disappointed when your players let you down like that, because you lose him for a week. Great, we'll get him back because he's so influential. But you know, you lose him for two or three, and then all of a sudden it becomes a factor. But look, I think victory will bounce back. They are.
Will they
losing.
Make some selection changes
well,
on the basis?
There's
of
automatic
the game.
Guerrero and Ben Falkler out. Ben Kelfiller out because
not
of
such a bad
the
thing
five
they
yellows.
Don't have to travel.
Yeah,
and Jai Ingham, Georgie Howard, Stefan Negro, and Rashid Mahazi coming in. So that'll be interesting. So I think it'll either be a draw, or I think victory will get back to winning ways.
For me, this is a do-or-die game for Perth. It's going to be Perth.
Yeah, right. I think Perth match up really well against victory, home or away. I think they win that game.
Really interesting game, Western Sydney and Newcastle, Dean.
Yeah, look, we have to be quick because obviously we've got a timeline here.
Snake, your man Snake.
I like Snake. I thought Snake took it really, really well.
Robbie Coyne was very, very, very confident funny. Early in the show when we were chatting
he was
to him,
superb between the sticks, though. You know what he gets paid to do, he did really well.
He was very good.
Yeah.
And he took all of the... you know, the ribbing from the Sydney fans.
He did. Look, it's 8th v 7th. Newcastle, for me, are flying. I like Newcastle. I think it'll be a draw. I think Western Sydney like draws, and Newcastle don't mind them too bad
this
either.
This is a neutral venue. Campbelltown is hosting this game.
Nothing neutral about that, mate.
And I reckon,
it's a Western Sydney heartland.
And I reckon Newcastle might get the job done.
There you go.
No, I think Western Sydney win this game and start their run towards the finals.
Looking forward to see how Campbelltown scrubs up.
Yeah, well, I know it's a great stadium. They play rugby league out there, so it will be good to watch. So that is the end of the A-League chat. We're going to talk to Stephanie Brantz about W-League next on Box to Box. Real keen to talk about that with two rounds to go.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News TalkSport. Now, in the 8 seasons since it was founded, the W League has established itself as one of the top women's competitions, in fact, sporting competitions in this country. Football has been a pioneering sport for women, and it's certainly setting the agenda with a number of other sports. Now, the voice of the W League in this country, Fox Sports' Stephanie Brantz, joins us on the line to talk about the season so far, the final couple of rounds, and maybe a couple of predictions about the finals. Welcome to Box, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me. It's exciting times in the W League with only a couple of rounds remaining.
Sure is. And what's your take on the season so far? After, you know, City had the season from heaven last year, many predicted that it'd be sort of a back-to-back scenario, but it's been far from that.
Well, it's been quite an extraordinary season all round. However, Melbourne City, they've disappointed some people, but I think it's prudent to remember that they lost the likes of Scottish superstar Kim Little, Jennifer Beattie, of course, in the centre of defence from Manchester City, who was over on loan last year, and also Lisa Devanna, who has just recently moved on to play with Canberra United. Yeah. So there's been a lot of changes to the City side, and they have been certainly competitive, and they're sitting in fourth spot. The Premiership is out of reach, so they can't go back-to-back, but they're certainly not out of contention. They are, however, clinging on because the battle for that fourth spot is very tight indeed.
It sure does, and it all hinges in a large way on this weekend's match to determine, you know, who's going to take the bragging rights going into the final round.
And who can say that, really, because it's been a couple of weeks of upsets, and what I've noted about the last few weeks of the W League is that the teams at the top seem to not want to win it. They all have these extraordinary wins and then follow them up with ridiculous losses. So it's
big scoring results.
Intriguing. Oh, unbelievable. We had 21 goals on Saturday last weekend, which is just...
Well, fans are getting value for money, Steph.
Well, certainly, although it's almost a cricket score, and I don't know what it says about the defensive structure of the W League on that particular weekend, but certainly it's exciting for the fans, and there have been great crowds across the league, which is good to see because the women certainly deserve it. They do play some beautiful football.
Stephanie, not only has there been very good crowds, there's been very good ratings on ABC, and it just proves that when you actually have the combination of Fox Sports and a free-to-air station working together, it's working very, very well for the W League. What sort of feedback are you personally getting from the broadcast on ABC? Because it's got such terrific reach right around Australia.
It certainly does, and I think it's a good product for ABC, and certainly the games deserve to be on free-to-air. Unfortunately, it is still only a match of the round, but it's been well-received, and I think people like the fact that they can at least keep across a game of the round every week, and you know, hopefully one day that's going to end up being the full competition. However, there is a ways to go in the women's game, and of course a full home and away season would be the first step towards that. There is talk of expansion next year, which would involve another team. I'm just not sure that would involve increased rounds. With the women's game, there's always a financial factor at play, and I think that will likely continue for another couple of years.
Well, there is certainly some excitement around who that expansion team could be. In Melbourne, there's some talk around South Melbourne putting a W League application. Central Coast Mariners have basically forecast that they are preparing their budgets to put a team into the W League next year. So there is a little bit of excitement around the expansion of the league. And how do you think, if there was one or two teams added, depending on how it all plays out, how do you think that would impact on the depth and the quality of the matches?
Well, I think that may be one of the problems. That's certainly something that troubles me, because diluting the competition would do nobody any favours. Central Coast, of course, fans will remember, were originally in the competition and then became defunct when it was too difficult financially for that side to continue. And they've had, you know, the likes of the Michelle Haymans of this world playing in their team. In fact, a lot of girls from Sydney FC have had some time at Central Coast as well. And I think that they would probably draw from, I think there was a team in Northbridge, so it would be more Sydney-based, I think, perhaps the players. However, if it didn't dilute the competition, then certainly I think there's room, because one side at the moment has a bye, so it wouldn't really affect the competition. Central Coast is looking at increasing their facilities and certainly making some developments there, which would be necessary for them to have a W League team. I'm not sure if you're aware that there was a few technical issues with the facilities in the double headers. It was really difficult for the women to be able to play there. They didn't have the dressing room facilities, and the sides would have to go to the league's club to change. They'd have to trudge across the road after full time because the men had already moved into the dressing rooms. So that was a problem. They tried to fix that by putting up some temporary tents out the back, which it wasn't doing the women's team justice, and certainly for a professional league, that's not what we want to see. So Sydney FC have chosen to play at other facilities. They were due to play at Leichhardt Oval. That was also not up to scratch. So they had a standalone game at Allianz Stadium a couple of weeks ago, which was a wonderful occasion for the women, and there were a decent amount of people who came out to see them play, but the ladies got to play on a proper professional ground with all the facilities that are due to them. If Central Coast does get those facilities, and I think perhaps it's they are worthy then of putting a team back in the competition if they've gone to all that effort. And I think it helps them with their approach to council and so on to be able to promote the fact that they would be including a team back in the league. As far as the talent goes, well, we do have a lot of wonderful players in this country, and we're fortunate in that most of our national team do play back here. There's only three or four still playing overseas during the W League season. And to have all those players on display here is fantastic. Are there enough to go around? I'm not sure. I think some funding to make sure that we keep the international talent coming over and playing in this league as well as important.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Stephanie Branch, the voice of the W League, on Fox Sports. Now, Stephanie, it's coming to prediction time. So for those of our listeners who are unaware, so Sydney FC are sitting on top of the ladder with two rounds to go on 22 points. Canberra, 20. Perth, 20. Now, those three look to be a lock for those top three positions. But Melbourne City, the reigning champions, are on 14 and Brisbane, 13. They play each other this weekend. And perhaps with a few results going their way, the Jets would not count themselves out. So how are you expecting it to shape up? Let's just look at that City v Raw match this weekend. What's your take on that? Do you think Brisbane Raw might be able to spring an upset away from home?
Well, it's crucial for Brisbane Raw because they have a bye in the last round. They are in the last chance saloon and they really upset their chances by losing in the Hunter last weekend. That was hugely disappointing for them, although it was a very exciting end to the match. They've also lost their keeper, Mackenzie Arnold, who received a straight red during that match. A contentious decision, some say, although it looked to be intent with the elbow. Mackenzie Arnold won't be playing, which is another blow for Brisbane. I think they deserve to have been as high as the top four. However, when you let chances like that slip, as they did last week, then yes, it's unlucky, but puts Melbourne City in the box seat to snatch that fourth position, especially seeing the two play each other. City can afford to lose and then still make it the following week. Newcastle Jets, of course, also have a couple of games, so they can still make it, but they've been inconsistent. They had a chance prior to Christmas. They played three teams below them in the last 3 weeks of December, and they could have actually secured a spot in the top four, and they had two draws into those matches, which really put them in a difficult position. So I would say City are the likely ones to go through, but they've been Jekyll and Hyde. After they had their 18-match undefeated run broken, they've really struggled to get back on top. And, of course, their coach, Joe Montemuro, went into the senior position at the men's side after John Van Skip returned to the Netherlands. So Jess Fishlock has taken on head coaching role there. She's
Doesn't seem to be working that at the moment, does it? Stephanie, it doesn't seem to be working, does it?
It's tough. I think Jess is a good coach and she's got a big future within the City Football Group, I suspect, in that position. But that's a difficult time of the season to be taking over and also to come into that position when you really need to bounce back and get some confidence. I think it's tricky. And to be a head coach and be on the pitch, I think it's a challenge. And while I think she will grow into that challenge, now is a tough time to be doing it.
Steph, just one last one for me. There's one of the great things about the W League is the imports. We get to see some amazing international and foreign players arrive. Who is the one foreign import that stood out to you out of the matches that you've seen that's been something special?
Well, I would pick one who we've seen consistently for a couple of years now, and that's Natasha Dowie at Melbourne Victory, and that's
She's
quite an extraordinary
good,
thing
yeah.
to say, given Melbourne Victory is sitting down in eighth position on just 9 points. But she is consistently carrying that side, and she's been absolutely extraordinary. Jen Hoy at Newcastle Jets has been in good form. Sophia Huerta at Adelaide. There's been a few across the board, but as far as solid players, Natasha Dowie, she's sitting third on the Golden Boot. She scored 9 goals for the Newcastle for Melbourne Victory, and that's more than half of their current goal scoring. So she's done a super job, and she's just such a solid player. I really enjoy watching her play.
Stephanie, okay, so your prediction, we'd probably say...
I'm not going to get away, am I?
No, you're not. You're doing a wonderful job of analysing the whole thing, but avoiding making the ultimate decision about who you think's going to win. So give us the two trophy holders at the end of the season, according to Stephanie Brantz.
Oh, okay. I think that Sydney FC will take the premiership, and ironically, they took until 2 weeks ago to bring in their first international player, so they've done it with a completely domestic-based team. I think they will take the premiership. I suspect that Canberra will take the chocolates at the end of the season, so they'll get another trophy and go level with the best of the best in the W League.
Okay, well, we'll record that and invite you back on the show after it's all over and play your expert tips back.
I think I'll be unavailable that week.
Not if you're right. Hey, well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. You know, on Box to Box, we're just loving the rise of football in the women's game around this country, and you know, whether it's at the international level with the wonderful achievements of the Matildas, or you know, the domestic league, the rise and rise of the W League in association, it must be said, with so many other women's sporting competitions, whether it's AFL football or cricket as well, that the women's sport is, in terms of, in particular, the team level, is getting the recognition it deserves and is on a wonderful trajectory.
Well, thanks so much, gents. So fabulous to have your support, and make sure you tune in on Sunday. We've got Canberra United hosting the Western Sydney Wanderers, and that'll be at Campbelltown Stadium. And, well, Canberra, they're looking to go for that premiership and perhaps prove me wrong and take both trophies. So,
how many goals will Ashley Sykes score?
Well, who knows, after she scored 4 the other week, which puts her level top with Sam Kerr at the top of the Golden Boot standings. Who knows? It could be a cricket score. So exciting times ahead, and that match kicks off at 2:30 on Sunday, so you won't want to miss it.
We won't. Stephanie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stick around on Box to Box after the news. Paul Williams from 442 Singapore is going to go through all of the backlash from the Jumbuk Motors getting kicked out of the Asian Champions League. We're going to bring Dino back in for the European wrap, and, of course, Marco with Stoppage Time. That's all next on Box to Box.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely
yes, welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We'll get into second edition football news shortly. Before we talk to 442 Singapore's Paul Williams about the scandal in the Asian Champions League. And then, of course, Dino will be back talking all the international football, including the African Cup of Nations, which is on right now. And not only is it a great tournament, but it's affecting a lot of other leagues around the world. So Dino's across all of that. But first up with second edition news, Mark Van Aken. You're back in the studio, brother.
I am. Now, former Manchester United manager Louis van Gaal has dismissed reports he's officially brought the curtain down on his managerial career. The former Barcelona boss has been without a job since he was given his marching orders by the Red Devils following their FA Cup triumph. But van Gaal has suggested he could still head down the retirement path if he doesn't receive offers for management positions. So he's sort of saying, hey, if I don't get a job by July, he might hang up the boots. Whether he does or he doesn't, we just wanted to go through, courtesy of BBC, some of Louis van Gaal's greatest hits.
Stupid question, I think. It's a stupid question.
Now, the fans are shouting every week, Louis van Gaal's army! Louis van Gaal's army!
64, the Beatles has a song. 64, when I'm 64.
I was squeezing my ass, but it was the wrong expression, because then you are doing that. I have twisted my ass on the bench.
Last year, the third captain was Mr. Mike Smalling.
Who is saying that? Source.
A lot of times I use the word horny to my play.
We played the best match of the season.
Is that how highly you rate the performance, yeah?
Yeah, you don't?
No, I'm just interested in what you how you see it.
Okay. That's good. That you are interested.
So do you think it was a foul on Falcao in the build-up, yeah?
So, you know that? No. Okay.
Thanks, Louis. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The blue ones are the good ones, because long balls are mostly very difficult. And I give it to you. You can copy it. And then you go to Big Sam.
It's not in the books that somebody has to grab with the hair, and only in sex masochism, then it is allowed.
In sex masochism. Well, there we go. There's a little long, and that was a video, but I think most of that translated nicely to the radio format there, boys. What a character, eh?
He was, and is. I guess, is his legacy tarnished because of his time at Manchester United? He did get the FA Cup after all, a little piece of silverware. But, you know, when the Brazilian World Cup finished, his stock was as high as it could possibly have been.
It was, but I can still remember at the Brazilian World Cup in 2014 when he substituted the goalkeeper in that quarterfinal against Costa Rica in the last minute of extra time to put him in for the penalty shootout, and he did it. So he's, I mean,
He tried it again when they got knocked out.
He did.
It didn't work.
But it didn't work. But what a fantastic little snippet of Louis's best work. I particularly like the very, very good, the when he describes his team's playing style as horny.
Yeah. The best is when he had that presser. He had a player next to him who completely escapes me who it was, and he's kind of looking, the player's just looking completely bemused. No idea what
as you would
about.
Be. What's this play?
I think it's what we call lost in translation.
Well, there is obviously a word, because my dad will always refer to like a nice car as a horny machine.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I think the direct translation, we would have, if he just said sexy football, everyone would have got it. But horny sounded better. Give us your best horny.
Horny. Anyway, all right. Now let's keep it clean. Hey, the Scottish businessman John Clarkson is set to become the manager of a Spanish third-tier side, Deportivo Tudelano, after he paid £150,000 to fill the position. Clarkson agreed to a deal with the club, which will see his money refunded if he can guide them to the second division of Spanish football. The 60-year-old has previously worked as a manager, coach, director of football, and owner in the lower leagues of England and Spain. So he has actually got some coaching credentials. But, gee whiz, boys. Buying your way in?
Yes. Well, there's a great tradition of that in many other sports around the world. You see the backmarkers in Formula One, not exactly the great drivers of all time that have cashed their way into these sorts of things. So at least the club gets the money. Here's a crack. And there's a movie in this one if it works.
There's been many a president's son or grandson in the older NSL, and even in the current NPL around the place that...
You're not suggesting Dean Hennessy.
I'm not suggesting Dean Hennessy, but... what I am suggesting is that it's not unusual for someone to have paid their way, so to speak.
There we go. Hey, boys, a bit of actual news. Roston Griffiths will miss Perth Glory's next two A-League games after breaching FFA's National Code of Conduct. The Glory captain was dismissed late in last weekend's 2-2 draw with the Jets, earning a second yellow after impeding a run on goal of Devante Klut. So there we go. He can appeal it, but it's unlikely because, of course, he might cop more weeks if he does that.
What did you think of that send-off, Rob?
Oh, well, but just one of those ones that could have gone either way in the end. But, if you take the chances with the appeal, then you're just as likely to cup the rough end of the pineal apple, especially given that the officials have had to eat crow after the best.
That's right.
Well, what's interesting here, though, because it was actually Griffith's reaction to referee Stephen Lucas, which put him under the FFA spotlight with a venomous spat from the midfielder, prompting what appeared to be another red card. So he copped two red cards. Bit of Graham Pole kind of action going on there, in reverse maybe. Hey, Tasmania's bid for an A-League team is discussing plans to build a football-specific stadium in Hobart, as reported by Goal.com. Robert Baltecki, one of the main men behind Tasmania's bid, met with Premier Will Hodgman on Thursday, so yesterday, to discuss what the island state needs to do to be included in an expanded A-League in the 2018-19 season. Goal understands that one of the major discussions was around the need for a venue tailored towards football, with Tasmania's other venues, of course, Blundstone Arena and in Hobart and Launceston's Aurora, no good for football.
I think that's stiff that they just couldn't design something with around a 12,000-seat capacity. I mean, even in the Premier League, we're seeing teams like Bournemouth and, you know, in the next division down Burton Albion with, very small boutique stadiums that are just reaming with atmosphere. I know Amy Park has been set up with the foundations to cater for a stadium that's almost twice its size once the contract with Etihad ends. Why can't they just build a nice little stadium that suits a local small club and that will get used a lot? Tell me why.
Look, I think it's a great point you make, Rob, and let's remember the research that was undertaken by the PFA before the A-League, Brendan Schwab's Australian Premier League manifesto, which really was the blueprint for the A-League. Right at the top of the tree.
Should have been, actually, but yeah, a lot of it was ignored by John O'Neill anyway.
Right at the top of the tree of all of that research was small boutique stadiums, rectangular, getting fans close to the action. Mm. And I think it's absolutely critical that whoever comes into this competition, that the stadium is considered really seriously. Mm. And if Tasmania is serious and they build a 10,000-seat stadium somewhere close to the centre of Hobart, it'll do very, very well.
And I reckon that's one of the reasons why New Zealand's never really cut it, because they play at stadiums like the Cake Tin, where even when they get a good crowd, it looks half empty.
Well, but when they play away from the cake tin, it's often in smaller, boutique type stadiums. The atmosphere seems to be a lot better.
Absolutely.
Anyway, let's see. Now, they've also got the working title of FC Tasmania, but Balotelli was at pains to say that's not definitely going to be the name, but I reckon it will.
Now, we are getting close, and Rob will want to wind this up, but I've been on the Sunshine Coast, as you know, and Rob took the mickey out of me in his opener.
No,
but
he was on a private island. He was wearing a velvet smoking jacket with a pipe and slippers.
But it was one of those pipes that blows the bubbles, though, that the kids have.
Well, I noticed during the week, though, that the Sunshine Coast do have a bid, sort yeah, of a work in motion. But can I tell you, being a football fan in southeast Queensland, and I was staying at a place that didn't have Foxtel. We did the old house swap, Mark, and I had to go to the pub to see the football. Yeah. As I did, it was a good excuse to get away from my two daughters and wife and go down to the pub and watch the football.
Clearly, they don't listen to the show every week.
But mate, I walked into the Budrum pub in southeast Queensland and asked them to put on Wellington Phoenix and Central Coast Mariners. And
what do they play, mate?
The guy behind the counter looked at me if I was an alien. He looked at me if I was an alien. So I tell you what, southeast Queensland may have a little way to go before they can get into
talk about boutique venues. The venue they're talking about has got about a 2,000-seat grandstand and nothing else.
Yeah, not quite that boutique.
Sorry, I love the Sunshine Coast. Great place for a holiday. I don't think it's a great
place. All right, boys, before we go,
trip.
Because Edge is moving house and the amount of requests I've had from the boys here, and we still haven't referred you on to our mates at Storage King. The month is almost ending. This is your one-month free month. So if you want to get in to some self-storage and you're moving, you're shifting, you're renting, whatever, then get on into Storage King right now. Go to storageking.com.au or call 1-800-STORAGE. Call the guys there, you know, whether it's... ask for the boss, Michael Tate, the CEO. He'll look after you. Or Russell Pike, he's the Southern Region boss. Or Gary Steegstra. Just ask for the bosses and they'll take care of you. 4 weeks free. Tell them Rob Gilbert sent you. And it's all courtesy of Box to Box, because you've got to get in right now. It's the best deal you're going to get all year. That's at Storage King, fella. So, Edge, we're going to get you set. All right. So, you're very silent there. That means silence implies...
Thank you, Rob.
Silence implies consent. Yes, exactly. After the break on Box to Box, Paul Williams from 442 Singapore. This disaster for Jongbuk Motors in the ACL getting kicked out. He's all across it. That's next.
Box to Box. For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
they're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. But not good news in this upcoming chat with Paul Williams from 442 Singapore about the Asian Champions League. Corruption rears its ugly head yet again. It does go back to a situation from 2013, but the bottom line is that Jongbuk Motors have been kicked out of the Asian Champions League for this coming tournament, and that is not good news. So welcome to the show, Paul. Good to have you back on under not the best of circumstances.
Yeah, always good to talk to you guys.
So, mate, can you just set it up for us, for those of our listeners? As I said, it does go back to 2013. Give us a bit of an insight into the original story and then why it's taken so long to get to this point.
Yeah, well, the story really has come on in the last probably 6 to 12 months. As you said, it dates back to 2013, and it was a club scout who the club claims was acting independently, that they had no knowledge of. Who's paid a couple of referees only a small amount. I think it was roughly only about $1,000, for matches in which he refereed against Jongbuk. And that's what it all comes back to. The interesting thing is, you know, there's no clear sign that, you know, matches were actually fixed. You know, Jongbuk actually lost some of those matches in which he refereed. So, but at the same time, it's quite clear that. You know, some attempt was made to, I guess, curry some favour with that referee. So that's what it comes down to. The story was first discovered probably early last year. It started to come out that, you know, Jongbuk was a club that was under investigation. It came as a little bit of a bombshell because, you know, they are Korea's biggest club. And I guess it was a test for the K-League as to, you know, as to how they respond. It's easy to, I guess, penalise the smaller clubs in the league. That's an easy decision. But when you've got Jongbuk, who are at that stage were probably 15 points clear in the league and, you know, looking set for, I think it was their third championship in a row, it's a test for the administration as to how strong they actually are. And they were docked 9 points and given a $100,000 fine. And that ultimately cost them the K-League title. They lost it on the last day of the season. And all this came out about the quarter-final stage of the Champions League last year, and the AFC chose not to act and allow Jongbuk to continue in the tournament. And as we know, they went on to actually win the Champions League last year, and for some reason or another, were allowed to actually enter, you know, this year's tournament, and it seemed that the AFC weren't going to act, but you know, a little bit of pressure from some good quality journalists, and Adelaide United here were quite vocal as well, has put some pressure on the AFC, and their new independent body has come to this decision that you know, John Book don't meet the requirements to enter the Champions League, and they've been kicked out.
Now, they've, as you said, they're the biggest club in Korea, and they are extremely proud. Do they have an opportunity to fight this, or is the decision final?
No, they do have an opportunity to fight it. I was emailing someone at the club today, and you know, they confirmed that they're appealing it to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and the club's quite hopeful, actually, that that CAS will overturn the decision. So that waits to be seen. But you know, the tournament kicks off in just a couple of weeks. I think the first round qualifiers kick off next week, and John Book's first game was scheduled to be around, I think, in a month's time, about the 22nd of February. So who knows how long CAS will take to make their decision, because, you know, really, everything's up in limbo at the moment. As it stands, they're kicked out, and JG United's in Group H along with Adelaide United, but we just now waiting to see what happens with the CAS verdict and when that's going to be.
And with respect to the so-called guilty party right now, they always do seem to come out and say we'll be cleared when the full story's known. It happens across all sports. Let's say the guilty verdict does stand. Is it just as likely that they might have the trophy taken off them from last season?
Well, you know, they probably should. They shouldn't have been allowed to continue in the tournament. I was of the opinion that as soon as they were found guilty by the court in Korea, then they should have been kicked out straight away of the Champions League. I don't understand why the AFC allowed a team who was found guilty of match fixing to continue in their premier tournament and then actually go on and win the tournament and represent Asia at the Club World Cup. It just really wasn't a good look. So I don't think they'll strip the title of them retrospectively now. I think that's done and dusted, but you know, certainly the right call has been made to kick them out. It sends a message to everyone across Asia that you know, that the AFC is serious about stamping down on match fixing, and it's just not worth doing.
Now, we do. It is the world game, and it's the world game because it involves all sorts of cultures. And you, Paul, being an Asian expert, and not only do you write for 442 Singapore, but you're the convener of Asian Football Feast, which we love your work there. What is the excuse that this guy's using for making payments to referees? Because it's pretty cut and dry, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure of the reasons that he's actually said as to why he's done it, but as you said, it's pretty cut and dry. You just can't be making any kind of payment to a referee under any circumstances. So it's quite clear. I know it is reported that you know, they are you know, long time friends that have been friends since high school, but you know, when you've got a referee that's refereeing a match against John Book and an employee of the club is paying him money, then it's pretty clear that it's a case of at least bribery, if not match fixing. So no matter what excuse he comes up with, I don't think he's got a leg to stand on.
Well, we're watching that story develop with great interest. Obviously, if you're an Adelaide United fan or an A-League fan who's going to follow the A-League clubs in the Champions League, that's a big story unfolding and quite a significant one. Let's move on to the A-League introducing from next season a 4+1 quota, which means that five foreigners allowed in the A-League, one needs to come from an Asian confederation country. That pulls us in line with the rest of the Asian continent, and I think it's a good development.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been calling for this for quite a number of years now. I don't understand why. It's taken, well, almost 10 years. You know, the Champions League's had the 3+1 rule for the best part of the last decade, and Australia's been a member of Asia for that entire time. And the rest of the continent has had the plus one rule, and Australia's been the glaring exception. And it's great to see that the FFA, even though it seems that the clubs, for whatever reason, don't like it, that they're pushing ahead with it anyway. I was quite disappointed to hear the comments from Greg Griffin this week. I think he was bang out of line to certainly intimate and suggest that, you know, bringing Asian players into the competition is going to affect the quality of play.
I cannot believe he said that. I cannot believe he said that.
That is, it's incredibly disrespectful to the region that, that we're a member of. It smacks of arrogance and ignorance. You know, you just have to look at some of the Asian players that have come and played here. Shinji Ono, Junpei Kusakami.
I mean, they would get a game in Adelaide every day of the week.
Absolutely they would. You know, Surat Suka, who played for Melbourne Victory quite a few years ago, Saeed Mohamed Adnan, you can, you know, roll them off. You know, and there has been some that have disappointed, but, you know, we've had plenty of players from Brazil and Argentina that have disappointed.
Not to mention the commercial imperative of actually opening up broadcast markets that these players like Shinji Ono and Junpei Kusakami can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And the region that we really should be looking towards is Southeast Asia. It's a huge market of untapped talent. And, you know, we like to conveniently use the excuse that, oh, we can't afford Asia's best players. And, you know, we're not going to go and sign a Kasuke Honda or Shinji Kagawa anytime soon. That's certainly true. But, you know, not everyone is motivated by money. There's a lot of players in Southeast Asia that just want to get the chance to move up to a higher league. We saw what happened when we played Thailand. We were played off the park by the Thai side, and, you know, the man of the moment that night was Chanatip, and he's now moved to Consadale Sapporo in Japan in the J League, Shinji Ono's club. And, you know, I'm sure he's earning far less money there than what he could earn in Thailand, but that's not what it is. It's about testing yourself at a higher level and trying to use that as a stepping stone. And you know, the fact that the A-League isn't trying to leverage that as the J-League and K-League clubs are is bewildering, because there are players there who have spoken of a desire to go and play in Japan and Korea to test themselves at that level. And that's where Australia should be looking towards. We should be trying to develop, you know, the best talent in Southeast Asia and pitch ourselves as a stepping stone. If you want to get a chance to maybe go and play in Europe, it's probably rare that a player is going to go directly from a Thailand or a Vietnam to Europe, but, you know, if they can come to Australia and prove themselves in the A-League, you know, we know European scouts watch the league, then it could be used as a stepping stone, and that's how we can pitch it. It's not all about the money for some of these players.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to 442 Singapore and Asian Football Feast's Paul Williams, and we're chatting about the recent 4+1 structure that's going to be implemented in the A-League soon. And as you say, and I've been bleeding on about this for a long time, and have not been you know, given the greatest of support when I support countries like Thailand. You look at the decision to expand the World Cup, and I know it's been slammed from pillar to post by many who know a lot more about football than I do, but I'm just naive to some of those views, and I take the view that, you know, that the world does include a lot of these smaller Asian nations who are entitled to contest the world game at the highest of levels, and it's still only, you know, less than a quarter of the countries in the entire world will qualify. So if we're part of that growth of Asian football and we participate in it, it's been going on in politics and business since Paul Keating was prime minister. So it's about time our sporting competition started to get involved. And if we haven't noticed, the Chinese are starting to spend a few dollars on the game, aren't they, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a fan of expanding the World Cup. You know, personally, I would have preferred to see 40 rather than 48 teams. But regardless, you know, I'm a fan of expanding the World Cup for the reasons that you said. It is the world game, and we need to include these nations and give them an incentive to actually develop. And, you know, I've spoken to a couple of associations over the last, you know, week or so since it's been announced, and you know, it's been overwhelmingly positive. They realise that there's an opportunity now for them to actually go to a World Cup, whereas, you know, with Asia's allocation of 4.5 at the moment, in all likelihood, you know, Japan, Korea and Australia usually take up 3 of those spots, which only leaves 1 slot available, and you're just closing out the possibility to so many nations. So now that it opens up, it gives, you know, countries like, you know, Thailand and Vietnam and Saudi Arabia and UAE and, you know, perhaps someone like Indonesia down the line to actually, you know, put in some long-term plans and aim to qualify for a World Cup in 2026 or 2030. And I can think that's only a good thing for world football if we're going to develop football in these nations and get them up to a higher level than what they currently are. I don't see why that would be a bad thing.
Well, it's absolutely right, mate, because you know anyone who's travelled within these countries sees firsthand how passionate they are about the game. Hey, Paul, mate, look, we've got to have you back on again real soon. It's been a wonderful insight that you've given us into both the scandal in the ACL and the decisions to change the qualifying situation. So, mate, that's all good stuff, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Have a good weekend.
We sure will, mate. That was Paul Williams from 442 Singapore. And his analysis is always great, Edge. It's good to have him on the show.
He's brilliant. And he made a very, very great amount of points, especially the stuff about Asia and the World Cup.
Excellent. Dean Hennessy next with the European wrap on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley and Dean Hennessy coming up shortly. You're streaming perhaps on the NTS app, maybe on whatever app you like, radio app. It's the latest app in radio that you can jump on board, or perhaps you're podcasting on.
Maybe Tune In, Rob.
Tune In Radio as well. BoxToBoxNTS.com.au for any of our past 61 episodes, this being the 62nd episode of Box to Box since we got this thing going. Now, boys, did you know that the skin is the body's largest organ? Some people might object to that, but it is a fact.
Mark has a large organ.
Pots calling kettles black, etc. All those sorts of things coming into my mind as you say that, brother. Love the skin you're in with Healthy Care Grapeseed Extract from Chemist Warehouse. As your body ages, oxidation causes your body to produce free radical cells, which are cells that can no longer repair themselves. So if you've heard of that term before, free radical cells are cells that can't repair themselves. So you need grapeseed extract. It might help to reduce free radical cell damage and could also assist in the improvement of blood circulation, which is very important for healthy skin. Right now at Chemist Warehouse, you can get 100 capsules of Healthy Care Grapeseed Extract, 12,000 for just $15. $15, can you believe that? That's an absolute ripping price. Always read the label. Use only as directed. Vitamins should not replace a balanced diet. Chemist Warehouse, lowest prices guaranteed. Dino, mate, you love to take care of your skin. You're a football manager. And
unfortunately, my skin's never been the best, so I've
always
had to take
care. Mate, you look like my little 7-month-old nephew, Oscar. Rocco is his name. Just Jessica, Ben, my brother and sister-in-law. You weren't listening to that. They probably weren't.
You should look after your skin. It's important.
Yeah. And Marco, he's
Dino's got that Welsh complexion that's had an adult life of playing football in the sun. He's holding up beautifully, don't you think, Rob?
Yeah,
thanks to Chemist Warehouse
Chemist
and all
Warehouse,
the help I can get. He gets there.
Boys. So there is an absolute poultice of news. We've got the African Cup of Nations and how it affects the European tournaments.
Well, don't forget the African Cup of Nations is very important for the Socceroos because the winner will be jettisoned into our group at the FIFA Confederations Cup 2017 Russia later this year, which is going to be quite interesting. Dino, you've been taking a bit of a look
A bit of a tribute to Graham Taylor as well.
Yeah, we're going to go to Graham with the FA Cup and Lincoln's success. But to start off, we'll go with the African Nations Cup in Gabon. And it's interesting, like the really have only just started the tournament. There are four groups, four teams in each group, and only Group A have played two. So at the moment, the top team is Cameroon on 4 points.
Roger
with Gabon.
Miller. Is he still playing?
Who's that?
Roger Miller.
Roger Miller. We love Roger Miller. Group B, Senegal are top in the group from Zimbabwe, Algeria and Tunisia. And Group C, Congo head the group with a win with our friends Cote d'Ivoire, who we always love, the Ivory Coast, Togo and Morocco. And then final in Group D, it's led by Ghana and there's Mali, Egypt and Uganda in there. So,
and some of the big names that our listeners will be familiar with that they're playing for their home nations.
Well, there's a lot of players that most probably, more than anything, Rob, it affects the teams in Europe because obviously they contract them, pay for them. And there's been controversy where some players have gone over. There's other players who've decided to stay and not gone over. So, look, I think it's not just literally in England either. It's all over Europe. Yeah. You know, in all the top leagues, there's a lot of players that go over there and play and represent their country. And to be honest, I don't blame them. I can understand why they do. Yeah. And you know, as Edge pointed out there, it's an important tournament that will have an effect in the champions when each of the confederations meet in Russia later in the year.
Mm.
So we've looked at also a story that developed last week where the ex-England manager, sadly, Graham Taylor, passed away. He was very famous for what he did at Watford with Sir Elton John.
Yeah, exactly.
And
honorary vice president for life.
And it's funny, I remember...
On two occasions,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, look, I remember, like, even growing up, that, you know, there was a boy up front called Luther Blissett, and obviously that's where Barnsley started, you know, and went from Watford to Liverpool, and then obviously a massive England career. But, look, he had I had the fortunate opportunity to spend an hour with him many moons ago. And look, he was a really interesting character, a really nice man. Everybody says that, in fact, no one's really ever said a really bad word about him. He had an unfortunate case when he was in the England job for that 3.5 years where they didn't make the World Cup.
And it was the video of him on the sidelines in the lead up to the European tournament prior.
Hurt him
where,
badly, though.
It was Ronald Koeman. He should have been sent off.
And then
instead
he scores
the winner, and there was some video footage captured of Graham Taylor ranting at the German referee, and he was right, but it just didn't look good on him.
It didn't look good, and I think there was another part of that. There was a documentary where Phil Neal and Phil was a very good footballer, played for England, played for Liverpool, was really, really good footballer. But as an assistant, you just wouldn't want him because he gave you nothing. All he just, you know, there would be a comment like, well, where are the England fans? And he said, they're up there, boss. Well, I mean, they're all in one area. There's, it's not complex. And you go, well, where do you think they are? They're there, you know.
That documentary you refer to, Dean, was probably one of the first times that it was
behind
the scenes at that international level. And I think everybody was a little bit shocked at how, I don't want to... because he had a decorated club career, didn't he? But
he did.
But it just seemed a little bit simple. Is that unfair?
Look, again, I don't know.
Or unsophisticated?
Yeah, most probably when you're on a bench, you certainly don't behave like normal. It's not like normal. You're sitting here, you know, in the studio talking away in a match where the game's happening and there's some really big events happening minute after minute. Your reactions and how you deal with it. I'd like to think I'm a little bit milder and more, you know, thoughtful about what I think I say to, whether it's officials or opposition coaches or players, of course. But again, it was most probably new, Edge, so most probably hadn't seen it before, and that's most probably
what I think everyone was shocked that the coaches were taking so much interest on where the England fans were.
Well, it was so irrelevant.
It was, wasn't it? And actually, they copped a lot of criticism at the time, didn't they?
But the point that you made, though, about him... you know, being a little stiff in terms of his entire legacy because, you know, he took Watford up four divisions,
which was unheard of.
And finished second in the then first division.
Yep, he did.
He finished second with Aston Villa and then returned to Watford and took them to second again. And really should be remembered as...
At club level, he was superb.
And he was a gentleman, wasn't he?
He was.
He was one of those English gentleman coaches that, in the Roy Hodgson mode almost, wasn't
he? I think he had, no disrespect to Roy, but I think he had a much better personality than Roy.
Yeah.
But I think what's really been good is that Lincoln City, which is one of the teams he manages, done a giant killing, which is what the FA Cup's all about.
Well, he played 150 games for them and then managed them.
Well, he did, and he managed them. And I mean, my favourite one from when I was growing up was Hereford back in 1971, where they beat Newcastle and they were in the non-league and Newcastle were flying with Malcolm McDonald and the like. And Hereford has never forgotten it. My godfather was the one who set it up, and you've met him as well, Edge, and Colin Addison. And he was part of it and was player manager at that day. So,
and this week's result against Ipswich.
Ipswich is a big
scalp for the club, but a great tribute to Taylor as well.
And I think what it did as well, and I had a friend there, I think we talked about this off air, that he's a Nottingham Forest fan, but he lives in Lincoln and he watches Forest every week with his dad, who's one of my dad's best mates. And he said their performance and effort, Nottingham Forest players should be heads in shame on the way they're performing so much at the moment. So it's interesting. So anyway, so we'll move on now to, obviously, we've got the Premier League coming up this week. I think the big game is Manchester City and Tottenham. It's second v fifth. Manchester City coming off a bit of a good hiding last week, and Tottenham, unbelievable.
Where'd that
form.
Result come from? I mean, they haven't been in the best of form, but that was unbelievable.
Well, the thing is, Rob, they're second now. So they've made some really, really big strides. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at the league table, you know, they're only 7 points behind a Chelsea side that's only got beat once all year. Obviously, Liverpool are right up there on equal points with Arsenal on 44 and then Manchester City 42. So it's a really important game for them to win to stay in touch with the top four spots.
Manchester City, I tell you what, it is probably the biggest game we've had for a month because if Tottenham can roll them at home, it pretty much puts them to the sword, Dean, on the championship, in my view.
Yeah, they do. I think if they were to lose this, I mean, what would it do? It would push about 6 points away. I mean, that's still two wins. And I suppose Tottenham are really in good form. They've only lost twice themselves all year. And, I mean, they're playing some really fine football. Dele Alli and Mr. Kane up front, they're hitting their straps and they're defending well. So all round, they look a really...
Harry Kane sounds a bit like you when you hear him in the press.
Oh, I don't know. He talks a little bit deeper with that Cockney accent and a little bit muffled. But yeah.
Where'd you get that from, Rob?
It just sounds like
it. I think if we gave Mark Van Aken a couple of goes, he'd have a good crack at it. But I think at the bottom, that's most probably also one we should re-alert ourselves to. It's, believe it or not, is, you know, we're looking at Leicester and Southampton. And it's an interesting one where they're only actually 3 points away from each other. So it's a bit of a 6 point. If Leicester were to lose that, Southampton would push well up into the table, but it would leave Leicester still languishing in and around the bottom. And obviously Hull City, who are in the bottom three, are away to Chelsea, so we don't fancy their chances. And unfortunately Swansea, who are bottom, go to Liverpool. So I think Liverpool will bounce back there.
And Leicester coming off a hiding to Chelsea.
That's right.
A sort of muddling nil-all draw against Middlesbrough the week prior. And then a good result against West Ham, a resurgent West Ham.
West Ham have turned the corner in the league, you know. They got smashed in the cup, but they've definitely turned their fortunes around in the league. And and I just want to just touch before we fly out, just on West Ham and Dimitri Payet. Yes. I mean, Payet last year was a revelation. Not only did well in the league and got them to where they almost got into the Champions League spots, then went to the Euros and really played well. And now all of a sudden, results aren't going well and decides he doesn't want to play anymore. And I think it's got to be the worst thing a footballer can do when you're contracted to do a job. He's not only let himself down, his family, but all the supporters.
Yeah.
In fact, they don't want him anymore. And they're not selling him. They're just waiting. They'll make him rot in the 20s. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad, sad state of affair, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, at least Slaven Bilic is speaking honestly and from the heart. So that's something good to see.
Sorry, and those people with BN Sports, you can get up tomorrow morning nice and early for the Friday night game, which is second versus sixth, Brighton and Hove Albion and Sheffield Wednesday.
Massive that.
Big, big game.
Very, very big game. And I also just on the touch, Yoloa, who's at Leicester, who did really well last year with Jamie Vardy, he's put a transfer request in. A lot of Premier League clubs chasing him.
Excellent, Dino. We never get through everything we want to. That was fantastic, mate. Next up, Mark's back in the chair with stoppage time. He's got a couple of those little tidbits. That's all coming up on Box to Box.
Box to Box. For Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings,
and Storage King,
they're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box to Box. Now the fourth official signals. There's about 8 minutes left. Marco, you always keep some of your best little bits up your sleeve for the end. It's been a good show so far. What have you got for stoppage time?
Well, for starters, we can close the book on Robbie Keane to the A-League, I think, after some of his comments this week. The former Premier League man says he's in talks surrounding a potential move to the Championship. The Irish striker has been on the lookout for a new club since calling an end to his six-year stint in the MLS with LA Galaxy. While there was speculation that Keane could possibly come to the A-League, he claims there is interest closer to home. I've got a few offers in England and from abroad as well. I've had to knock back a couple, which were maybe a bit too far away, he said in the radio interview with Talk Sport. Wouldn't be talking about Australia.
Yeah, well, they're not too far away unless the Antarctic's planning to run another A-League.
Yeah, exactly right. So there it goes. That's a shame because I think Western Sydney were advanced, as were a couple of other clubs in the league trying to get him down here. But anyway.
The Irish. Life. There you go. The Irish, eh?
Why is it the Irish? Now, where do you come out with that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're not that far away.
You probably still call police cars paddy wagons.
Paddy wagons, hey, that's true.
To our Irish brothers and sisters.
You know,
we love you.
I heard on whether it was a Today Show or a Sunrise, about a year ago, and one of the presenters was talking about the news, and they said, there was a paddy wagon. And I was like, really?
No, well, look, being a former New South Wales police serving member myself, some two decades ago, the F-150, the Ford F-150, was referred to by everyone as the paddy wagon.
Yeah, I get that. And that was 20 years ago.
And most people who used the term wouldn't have even had a clue
what it meant. It doesn't. Yeah, it's not that good, actually. Dean, who is behind the glass, is having a good chuckle.
Mate, he's the Welsh, the Celtic Brotherhood, mate. What's going on, Dino? Come on, mate. Anyway, hey, massive news this week. Serie A giants Juventus unveiled a new logo that has been met with heavy criticism from fans. The Italian chants have gone in a new direction with their logo, although the unusual design has been criticised by all and sundry. It looks like it's been described in various forms, from a penis to a tap to I don't know what.
Well, I'd be interested to see someone who's got one of those binoculars shaped like a tap, but it looks like a J, doesn't it? That's what it does.
I think that's what they were going for.
Fair enough. But it just takes away one of those classic international, not just football, but sporting logos and reduces it to...
Well, the context is just imagine taking the Melbourne Victory Shield with a big wide V, just doing away with that and having some kid put MV in white on a blue background.
And some marketing graphic designer would have been paid a couple of million for it, yeah.
I don't understand that. What does the great Juve man himself, Lou Sticky, got to say?
Lou actually came out for it. So we saw him on Facebook yesterday.
Must be on the payroll.
Took him 20...
Has he got a graphic design company?
He does drive a Jeep, which is not a... just tribal. I think I do everything but that, to be honest. But, interesting that he came out in support of it. But
not a fan. I'm with you, Rob. It's rubbish.
On the old logo, it has a stallion on it. Yeah, they're the zebras. I don't understand that.
Come on. Well, explain the point you just made, but you're not going to?
What do you mean?
Well, they're not the zebras. They're Rosso Bianco, mate. I know.
They've got a zebra buddy kit.
Yeah, I know they got the zebra.
It's reasonably famous.
Eddie
McGuire would tell you he invented that kit, but bad news for you, Ed.
The Melbourne team, the zebras.
Well, it was the Brunswick Juventus, and then when they had to Australianise all the ethnic names, it became, the Brunswick Zebras or the Melbourne Zebras, like Heidelberg
Being
United became
Victoria
the Warriors.
From New South Wales.
And South Melbourne for a time became the Lakers, didn't they?
Until the LA Lakers. Yeah.
They took it
off. What they actually, in 82, they were the Gunners. So they already tried
the Gunners.
They were the South Melbourne Gunners, and they probably got a letter from Arsenal at the time.
See you later, brother.
And then the Lakers, which actually makes sense because they play at Lakeside Stadium, they got a nasty letter telling them to get rid of it.
They could have been the Swans too at some point. Look, but anyway, that's just a little trip down memory lane. Wasn't it great? Anglicising all of our wonderful traditions and heritage of migrant communities in Australia. Mm. Ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. That's why we need a couple of the old NSL teams in the A-League.
Just to mix it up a bit would be good, wouldn't it?
All right, what's doing next?
I'm actually just looking for another item here. I can't find it. But what I found interesting during the week on a Melbourne Knights retrospective I did on a podcast, I didn't realise, and I just wanted to find the actual, that when they were forced to get rid of the Melbourne Croatia name, the Knights is actually a moniker. So it stands for something in Croatian that's reasonably, not offensive, but it's basically like a little, middle finger to the old powers that be at the ASF or whatever they were at the time. So, so it's not as clear-cut as, they decided to become the Knights. But anyway.
I saw the Melbourne Knights serious Twitter fans got behind you on that little podcast you did, Mark, which was great. I'm just wondering when the police are going to turn up to your house.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway. No, that was great talking to Stevie Horvath, the man from ABC. Some good memories there. But I reckon South Melbourne...
They were a super team, weren't they? The Knights. That 94-95 team, they were a super team. We were just shooting the breeze earlier, weren't we, with Dean about Mark Viduka's little... As a result of that, there's been some great stuff on social media. And Mark Viduka's, I think, 1995 interview with Mike Tomalaris, the voice of cycling, who was filling in for, obviously, the grand final broadcast on the sidelines. And Mark Viduka said he didn't want to go and play in England because he didn't think it was suited his game. He felt at that stage in 95 he was a little bit slow and he didn't like to run.
We should have actually grabbed that audio. I'll tell you what, just jump on YouTube. If you're a fan of the game beyond the start of the A-League, there's so much classic stuff out there, watching the games, the crowds, the interviews. In fact, the funny interview in that too was On the Ball, which was a precursor to the World Game. And the fact that you've got Mike Cockerell there, he's got his earring in, and you've got Andy Pascalides with the big moustache. Les is there, Johnny Warren's there. And I think it was Les Steinflug at the time, who was trying to take Viduka away on a six-week tour of Europe in the middle of the NSL season when there wasn't even a qualification path. It was just playing friendlies. And the fact they had the – how much time we got, Rob? Am I going over?
Going.
The fact that on the set they actually just had the plasma. It was probably the first version of a plasma TV behind them. And when they then crossed, because they were up in Sydney, to crossing to Viduca and the president of Melbourne Knights at the time, who was slagging off Scheinflug, they're all just watching him on TV. So you got the camera of five guys on a TV set staring at an actual TV. Amazing stuff.
No, there's some great names in the SBS those days. Andy Pascalidis. Remember Greg Blake? Greg Blake used to be the Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember Greg Blake? I mean, it's incredible incredible names and history in some of that. Was anybody watching?
Well,
we were watching, but was anybody else watching?
Yeah, exactly. But but the old SBS, it deserved its nickname, didn't it? Sex Before Soccer. And
I thought it was Soccer Broadcasting Service.
Yeah, whatever it was. Anyway, boys, lovely to reminisce. Perhaps we'll reminisce with some of the old-timers again. We get a segment set up and talk to someone who's a bit of an expert on the subject of some of the old teams and some of the good old days just to...
We'll get Greg Blake in here.
Oh, well, why not? Let's do it. Well done, boys.
Good Paddy Muff.
It was box to box. That's full time. It wasn't padding. It was quality content
that
only Mark Van Aken can come up with this because he's a professional football broadcaster at the very highest level, aren't you, Mark? You don't have to acknowledge that, but I know you're blushing as I say that. So join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.